Okay, hello again, and thanks for joining us today. It's August 27th for this session on new and used vehicle lending. My name is Drew Cavani. I'll be your moderator for today. If you are new to our programs, I'd like to welcome you. I'm going to introduce our speaker, Joel Miller, in just a few minutes. And at the end of this hour, we'll open up the lines for any questions you may have. So I do encourage you to jot down those questions that may pop up as he goes through his presentation. When we take those questions at the end of the hour, you just hit star 2 on your touch-tone keypad, and that can open up the line to ask ask the question. Additionally, today's program is authorized for use only by the individual registered credit union site, and any unauthorized use, copying, or file sharing without our written consent is prohibited. So let's see what else do I have to tell you. You know that we're recording the session. I do have a little infomercial for next week's September 1st session with Gay DeCesar. Gay is going to talk about deposit account regulations, and her session will cover the federal regulations that affect how credit unions offer share account products, and includes discussions of regulations regarding funds availability, reserve requirements, electronic fund transfers, UCC issues, truth and savings, and so on and so forth. So join us on September 1st. You can contact your state league or myself if you're interested in listening into that program. But you're here today to talk about auto lending and cars and increasing your programs, and for that we have with us Mr. Joe Miller. Joe is the Director of Customer Service for Auto IMS, a widely adopted software and technology services company devoted to the automotive remarketing industry. Through a relentless focus on service and industry education, Joe helps Auto IMS create services that directly impact his client's bottom line. So I'm happy to welcome to the phone lines at this time. And Joe, I'm looking forward to your presentation today. So take it away.
Drew, thank you very much. You've done this before. That was excellent. Appreciate it. And thank you to everyone listening. It's a pleasure to be here with you today to talk about a topic that I'm not sure how many presentations you get about the auto lending world, and specifically where I'm going to go deep, which is what happens when the loan goes wrong. But we'll get there in a minute. So I think my slides were sent around in advance, and we don't have a WebEx today. I planned some great animations, and I'll try to paint a picture for some of those so that you'll get part of the joke anyway as they come. But if you've got those in front of you, I will kind of follow that roadmap and refer to those in my notes as we go here. So today what I do want to talk about is I will tell you a quick blurb about us in a second, just so you know what the perspective that I come from to the industry and why we care about credit unions and automotive lending and remarketing and all of that good stuff. But we'll hit a couple of the highlights in the auto lending space, so sort of macroeconomic stuff. I'm not going to do an economics presentation because that's not my deal, but all of the things we're hearing as we travel and speak to the industry and go to the conferences. And then we'll talk about maximizing recovery. So some of the best practices, we are well entrenched with many, many lenders, which I'll talk more about in a second, and try to give you some ideas of what you can do when the loan goes wrong. And then sort of what I think of as the tack-on topic for our hour together here is compliance, and it's something that most of you on the phone, I'm sure, are much more well-versed than we are, but we'll just give you kind of our high-level perspective on it and its effect on staying out of trouble in the lending space. But before I talk about who we are, I want to talk a little bit about who you are. So whether or not you are a credit union with any type of auto lending portfolio or thinking about getting into auto lending, or maybe you sell 10 cars a month at one very local auto auction. Maybe you sell cars right off of your lot. Maybe you have a national contract with Manheim Auto Auctions to sell hundreds of cars a month. You know, the idea is that I hope you'll stick with me for a little while today. And if I do my job right, you come away with a few new ideas about this topic. So the worst case is not any worse than what happened in the stock market on Monday. So that's my visual on this slide, is what happened to the market Monday. And luckily, since then, it's bounced back. But I promise it will never get as bad news as what we saw Friday and Monday in the stock market. So a little bit about Auto IMS as I look at my third slide here. Just so you know who we are, where we come from. a bunch of very smart and brave people in the auto auction industry about 17 years ago got together and said, you know, there's this thing called the internet, and we're still taking Polaroid pictures, very expensive Polaroid pictures of all these cars that companies are sending us to sell through the lanes, and then we're packaging those up with all sorts of descriptions about the damages to these cars, and we're FedExing them, and that's a very expensive process, and those get lost. And then we're managing, best case, we're managing emails coming back with information about what these consigners of vehicles want to do to these cars and how they want to proceed in terms of selling them. You know what? We need a standard language. We need a common platform. And the internet is here to enable that. And so they put their heads together. They invested some money and some technology. And today, what that's led to is just what they were hoping to do, a common technology platform enabled on the internet. That's our core product, is really inventory management, bringing the sellers and buyers of cars together, primarily the commercial consigners of vehicles. So it's everything from large banks and rental car companies, fleet lease companies, all the way through the subprime spectrum of lenders, and of course credit unions. And I will share with you some proprietary data, sort of a cross-section of our database today, as we talk about some of the remarketing and recovery processes. As we look at that, a lot of that will come from just what I paired out related to credit unions. And there's over 450 credit unions already touching the Auto IMS platform. That's part of the 3,000 plus, you know, overall consigner entities that we have, and pushing 600 member auctions. So we talk about bringing the remarketing industry together, and I think of remarketing as an industry within many industries. And in your case, you know, today we're talking about credit unions, and what a strong industry you guys have, and an interesting approach to your customer, to lending, and everything we do revolves around, I think we take a very similar approach and style to credit unions. It's very high-touch customer service, and everything revolves around that car and you as a customer. So that's enough about us. I'm going to move on to the next piece and really dive in here. And again, I mentioned I would not give an economics presentation. In fact, most of my presentations don't even contain good English. But we'll do the best we can. I do want to present some data and some of the things that we're seeing to kind of bring this all together. So as we talk about the lending space, I still hear on NPR every day, as the recovery continues, well, you know, despite what we saw in the stock market, this economy is rip-roaring here in the U.S. in many ways. We've seen six straight years, at least, especially in the auto lending space, six straight years of new car sales growth. So, again, this is repetitive for some of you. I'll go a little bit quickly through this part of it. But, you know, we bottomed out around 2009, below 10 million cars, right around 10 million new cars. And just before that, we were, you know, topping out close to 17 million new cars being sold. And to put that in context, there's around 220 million vehicles actively being driven on the roads in the United States. And that 17.5 million new cars sold target that they're projecting for 2016 is also in the context of 40 million used car sales. So all 220 million cars on the road are used cars, right? So just putting in perspective used versus new sales. The lending standards are easing, as you all probably know. They're starting to come back down. Some might even start to think about those who were affected with one giant blip, or one or two giant blips in the crisis years of 08, 09. You know, how is their credit going to recover, and how many of these folks are all of a sudden going to have those two blips sort of drop off of their credit report in the next couple of years? What's that going to do to the lending space, and could that accelerate things? So we see lending up, auto lending up 11% on a dollar-to-dollar year-over-year basis, and the delinquencies are kind of tracking on a percentage basis somewhat flat is everything that I'm reading, you know, ticking up maybe just a little bit, but we are not in that sort of bubble percentage space that we were back in the doldrum days. We're seeing average new car prices around $32,000 and up, and car payments are tracking around $488. One of the interesting storylines in the lending space right now, obviously, is the terms. And so cars are becoming more reliable, they're lasting longer, and that's helping. But I think we're also just finding new ways to be flexible and loan money, right? So 84-month term, that's not an average by any stretch. I think the average is closer to 62 months, something like that. But for new car lending, we're seeing terms extend out to 84 months, which is pretty incredible. I get a lot of these stats from Experian. If you guys are tracking Melinda Zabritsky and some of the Experian stuff and other sources in the industry. So that the slide title here about lending a car, which probably makes more sense for the next slide, really, when I think about it, which is the nice and leafy slide. And then we're one of the other things we pride ourselves on here at Auto IMS is our ability to come up with a really terrible pun. So there's one for you for the day. And really that's been the biggest storyline that we're tracking with our lending and financial customers this year is the lease penetration, and it's through the roof over the last few years, and everyone is gearing up for what happens when these cars come off of lease and how that's going to affect the wholesale markets, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. Couple stats, and really a big part of what's driving this is the prevalence of Gen Y and the millennial generation coming into the car buying market. These are not our traditional car people. Everybody gasps, this is the United States, we love our Mustangs, our growling V8s and all that. Well, times are changing, and I'll tell you, there's driverless cars on the horizon, right? And these are real things. We'd rather be looking at our smartphones and our devices. And I'll tell you what, it's happening, and I hope you don't do that while you're driving today. So what people who aren't necessarily car people tend to do more is lease a car. And we're seeing in that Gen Y and millennial space around a 28.9 lease penetration. And I pulled that out of one of the very few automotive lending-related articles that I see in all the various credit union email newsletters and publications that I get. Just Wednesday, I saw that stat in the CU Credit Union Insight notification that I get every day. And they specifically talked about this generation and that lease penetration going up. So I've seen a couple different stats about overall leasing penetration in the market, and somewhere between 22.5, and I just saw another stat of 26.7. Penetration, but it's trending up is the bottom line. I mean, year over year, it's up at least 30%. It's at the highest it's been in 10 years, and it just keeps coming. You know, another thing that I think is affecting this is I saw a little bit of math. I didn't verify it, neither an economist nor a mathematician, but if the maximum payment that this next generation of car buyers is willing to pay is around $300 a month, and the maximum down payment they can get their hands on is around $3,000. That puts you in an ownership situation of a car that's worth around $20,000. Well, if you go into the dealership and they say, well, for that same kind of money down and per month, I can get you into this much nicer $35,000 car, I think we're making a decision there, especially if I'm living closer to the city now as a younger person and I don't have to drive quite as much. I'm not really worried about these mileage limitations. The lease terms are even extending, so there's a lot more flexibility. All of a sudden, this lease penetration is taking off. So those are some of the stats we're seeing. And there's the National Auto Dealers Association talking about a 28% jump in the late model supply, and that's what's kind of a huge number. And I will tell you, from the manufacturers, especially the captive finance arms of these manufacturers who are responsible for many of these leases, they are ramping up and figuring out what are we going to do with these cars when they come back. If I'm Chrysler Capital, and I know I've got, thousands and thousands of Chrysler 200s that are going to hit the Midwest in, the fall of 2016. I got to have a place to put those cars. I can't just put them through an auction lane all at once because I'm going to lose my shirt. So that's moving on to the next slide. I think I'm around 2-4 slide 6 here. What this means. And we're talking about that glut of cars coming, a sea of cars. And, I like to start with the car buyer. And I don't know about all of you on the phone, but, you know, I made that leap a number of years ago to where I said, gosh, these cars are so much better now. I'm just going to save that depreciation hit as a retail car buyer. I'm going to buy a car that's a couple years old. And my most recent cycle, I kept that last car for a lot of years, time to buy a new car. And I went and I found the car that I wanted, and I realized very quickly that the brand new version of it that came without the extra 20,000 miles and without the dog hair and the funny smell and the crack in the leather and whatever was about the same price after you piled on, the dealership, I should say, piled on the incentives for the new car. And we're finally starting to see that tide turn. So this was a couple of years ago even, where I made the decision to buy a new car, and I think a lot of people were making decisions to buy the new car instead of the lightly used one simply because the price differential wasn't there. The depreciation hit wasn't there. Consequently, in the wholesale space, what we saw in the auction lanes and what we saw with our clients, who are these commercial consigners getting rid of all these off-lease and repo cars, and they were heroes. They didn't have a ton of volume. There was a ton of demand for these late model cars, and they were selling the daylights out of them for great values. So now the tide is finally turning. It's really here, and all the trade mags that we read, and I'll tell you, if you're not big into the remarketing space, you don't have a ton of visibility, one of the things you can do is add the auto remarketing, Google Auto Remarketing Magazine, and add their daily alerts, their email newsletter, to your cadre of stuff if you want to pay attention. They have some good articles, and a lot of what I'm reading now is the downward pressure on the wholesale pricing. So that is coming. 2018 is, I think, going to be where everyone really starts to feel the pain. 2017, 2018, they're projecting close to 4 million of these sort of late model off-lease cars flooding the market. Here's where the advice starts. And so get out your grains of salt. But what we're seeing, if some people are calling for this 5% hit across the board. If you look a little bit closer, peel back that onion a little further, as my colleagues on the phone, Keely, she always likes to say, peel back that onion. It's really segment by segment. And so one of the things you start to do as you grow your auto lending portfolio is figure out what kinds of cars your membership are buying and or leasing, if you've got a lease program, from you. And what kind of cars are coming back to you when the loan does go bad or that you come off of the lease. And if, again, you're in a particular market and you've got a ton of sedans or you've got a ton of pickup trucks, you have to make decisions about how quickly you're going to try to offload those things and where. And we'll talk some more about those decisions that you can make. So really, that's the first thing. So watch your segments, because while one segment might fall 5% for real, the whole market isn't going to fall 5%. It's not going to fall off a cliff. We might continue to see SUVs, trucks go way up or at least hold steady, while other segments are falling off the cliff. Some regulations just got lifted, or some incentives for these alternative fuel vehicles. That's changing the market for alternative fuel vehicles, that type of thing. Keep an eye on your segments. So we're going to start to transition into more of this type of material now. We talked about that other topic we have to cover, and this glut of cars coming. If your volumes are coming up, you also have to be very aware of what this means and staying on top of this, the data security, as well as the taking care of your clients, protecting your customers as you are a lender in this space. Not only discriminatory lending stuff, but also security of data. So talk to you about those things. I put cars for eyeball on the slide just because that's we talk a lot about eyeballs in our industry. And so how do you get the most eyeballs on the car? That's what everyone's asking. And so let's talk about a few of those things. On the next slide, I've got a nice picture that actually might make you feel a little bit intimidated. And if you've ever walked into an auto auction, a real wholesale not one of these fancy Barrett Jackson places, but a real wholesale auto auction, it can be a little bit intimidating. If nothing else, it's certainly loud. And if you don't know any better, you feel like if I sneeze, I'm going to buy a car. Typically doesn't happen that way. But the good news about the thriving auto world of auto auctions is that you don't have to make your own market for the vehicles that you're repossessing, that you have to sell. It's the auction's responsibility to do that. But what we want to talk about is what you can do to make the best of those markets that are available to you. So a couple things about this picture and about the auto auction world. If you do have experience with auto auctions, or limited experience, I should say, you might think of this giant parking lot, typically near an airport in a metro area or out in the country somewhere. Not many people know about these things. Looks like a glorified shed in a corner, or usually a series of sheds as it relates to these the bigger auctions. But these companies have an army of people that are doing everything from pounding of the base of dealers, not just local dealers, but they're forging relationships with dealers all over the country in many cases, because this is becoming such an internet-enabled marketplace. They are doing their best to get the right mix of cars into their lanes at the right time, and usually about once a week you have this melee happening. Here's an auction lane. Here's a picture of an auction lane here. You've got a person who's responsible, maybe the owner of that car that's in the lane. You've got a bunch of dealers standing around. You've got an auctioneer doing that typical auctioneer chant, and it's action-packed. Now, the thing you can't see in this picture is the screens on the wall. I wasn't able to fit those in, but every auction we walk into these days has at least one or two monitors in every auction lane. And what's happening on those monitors is not only an information source for the dealers that are standing there physically in the lane, but there's an online component to this physical auction. And there are dealers sometimes across the country, usually just a little further out, maybe 100 miles or 200 miles, and they are watching this auction lane remotely. And it's literally a live video feed. Many of them are bidding as they go and buying cars without actually being in that lane and smelling the car and inhaling the exhaust. And so the internet component is alive and well and happening too. A little bit more about this market that's being made for you and that's available to you. There's 331 National Auto Auction Association member auctions. I mentioned we have, pushing 600 member auctions. You start to fold in things like salvage auctions. These are very viable channels around the country where if you've got a car that's been banged up a bit or doesn't belong, doesn't necessarily run on its own, those are great channels as well. Many of you probably know a local auction that may not be a National Auto Auction Association member, but they're still making a great market, and we have some of those members as well. The NAAA did sell, from their last annual report for 2014, sold 8.7 million cars. They're touching close to 15 million cars through the auction process. And, really these guys are just, they're the place where they do the magic of turning metal into dollars. So, that's close to $9 billion worth of, vehicles going through there. So we talked about the screens, we talked about the internet. I want to talk a little bit more about how these channels and this market is evolving, in case you're not aware, and especially about this internet piece. So on the next slide, we talk about evolving channels. And there are a couple flavors of selling online that are taking off. And the auction industry likes to tout this near 25% of vehicles are selling online. And I will tell you, sometimes the picture is painted in such a way that, hey, no matter where your car is or what it looks like, if we can get some pictures of it and a decent description of it, let's put it online and we'll sell it. 25%. It's really close to 20%. 20 out of that 25 is, so the vast majority are selling through that on-screen process. They call it simulcasting at Manheim. That's sort of become the Kleenex of this technology. They kind of coined that term and that brand, but a lot of people call this simulcasting of the auction over the internet. And so, you know, the online sales, the vast majority are happening that way. But there are 5% of cars coming into this online world that literally aren't running through the lane. There's a need for these vehicles. The dealers are looking for them. They are trying to find them. And the sellers of these cars, of all cars, are trying to get those eyeballs. They want the eyeball share of the dealer base, and they're finding new ways to do it. So a couple considerations as it relates to online selling. If you are going in a channel that isn't running down the lane, or maybe it's already run down the lane first, these are some decisions you have to make. Do I want to send the car down the physical auction lane first before then listing it maybe for the rest of the week online if it doesn't sell in the lane? Can I have an online listing, get some dealer eyeballs on this thing during the week? How are you going to set a floor price for that car? I've got a slide coming up about floor pricing in general, but you know, a couple things people talk about is I'm going to set the floor price higher. If a dealer is going to find this thing and buy it sight unseen online, they must really want this particular make and model. They've got a retail buyer sitting there waiting for it. I'm not making that recommendation. I'm just saying that seems to be the strategy that's deployed most. There are some different takes on that. We talked about the physical auction first. Many lenders for a long time said, hey, this is a repo. It's widely accepted, commercially reasonable. I have to run this car down the lane first before I explore any alternative channels. Well, listen, the online space is proven. There's competitive bidding online. And again, if you set that floor price properly, you potentially are doing yourself, your debtors, your whole marketplace a favor by getting that car online earlier and often. So that's something to evaluate. There's also this concept of multi-platform. And again, if you're paying any attention to the remarketing industry, there's another association that represents more and is made up of the consignor world. I haven't seen many credit union members of that, but I'm sure they would love to talk to you. And this is the International Automotive Remarketers Alliance. And talk about, you know, committees being formed, education being done. They have a certification program. Just a great way to learn more about how to sell a car wholesale. They put out a white paper over the last year or two to talk about tying all the online platforms, the online auctions, and there's just a few that are really prominent wholesale online auctions, tying those together in such a way where the bids transmit from one to another so that regardless of what platform the dealer eyeballs end up on, they're seeing the latest competitive bid from every platform for that car. So imagine getting a vehicle posted on multiple online auctions and not having to worry about selling it twice by accident and definitely making the most out of the competitive bidding world. That's coming. That cross-bidding isn't available yet, but there is the concept of listing the car in multiple places, getting it out there, and then once a floor price is reached in one market, the vehicle comes off of the other, the listing comes off of the other markets. So talking very quickly through a number of concepts here, but just to give you an idea of how the internet is evolving in this wholesale space and what people are asking for. Another thing to consider that's being enabled by the internet is this concept of representing your car remotely. And we'll talk a little bit more about this, but not only does the car itself need to be represented properly, in other words, a great description and full disclosure of what that car is and what's wrong with it especially. The days of rolling back odometers are hopefully long gone. They widely are. I'll tell you in our observation, you just don't hear about it anymore. But the days of gaming the system around, well, maybe if we don't talk about that scratch or maybe that frame damage will go unnoticeable, those days are quickly grinding to a halt as well. And what sellers with any volume whatsoever find is that if they misrepresent a car, especially for these internet sales, you know, you're going to end up eating transportation costs. You're going to end up having lots of problems. So the auctions are great at writing a condition report accurately, and the recommendation there, especially if you're going to sell on the internet, is to take advantage of properly representing the car. The other thing to think about in terms of evolving channels is this world of what we call third-party remarketing. So GE is a company that's big in this space. There are a number of other players in this space, and many of the credit union vehicles that we touch and the credit unions that we interact with in any way, shape, or form are brought to us through a third-party remarketer. In other words, someone with tons of experience selling vehicles, navigating the auction channels, the online channels, they're paying very close attention to this. And one of the things that they're able to do by bringing together this volume of vehicles is to build a brand in the lane among the dealer base and to also get favorable treatment by the auctions themselves. So at the end of the day, you need cars to make money, and the more cars you have, the more money you make for the auctions and everyone else. So this is a potentially great channel to leverage these third-party remarketers. Lane position and volume, all that stuff is very important. Grouping like sets of inventory together. So if you are in a market where your membership base happens to buy pickup trucks for whatever reason, are you going to work with a third-party remarketer or go to an auction that doesn't really have a lot of pickup truck buyers? Probably not. That's probably not the right play. So those are the types of things to think about and to ask a company who's pitching you on third-party remarketing. Ask them, where will I be in your run? Tell them what type of portfolio you have. What's the typical repossession look like? Share your data with them so that they can help you make informed decisions. And also beat them up on the fees. Ask them what the fees are going to be. We'll talk about managing the bottom line here in a minute, but that's one of the pieces of it. So online, we're talking about third-party remarketing, and a lot of this comes down to how much control do you want over every vehicle that's going to go that you need to sell. I won't even say go to an auction, but maybe that you need to sell in one way or another. And one of the pieces of secret sauce, one of the great sources of ego in our industry, et cetera, et cetera, we'll talk about on the next slide, which is really about the floor price. If you see any of our ads circulating lately, we've been talking about the blend of art and science. And while I often talk to our clients and say, look, I'm not going to tell you how to price a car. You know your market, you know your inventory, and you know your, again, secret sauce. Whatever your formula is, great. I just want to know what's the science that you're putting with it, and is your art sound, and are you measuring your outcome and trying different things? These are just some of the difficult questions we're asking. Couple of items that come up. When you run a car down an auction lane for the first time, dealers are savvy. They're there every week. They're watching. Is the first money on that car the best money? If you decide not to sell it because maybe the market's a little soft this week, but you got close, maybe you got close to that floor price, maybe you're a couple hundred bucks away from what you would take for that car, are you doing damage to your brand as a seller in the auction lane by not selling that car? And when that dealer sees that same car, and there's a chance they'll remember that car, and they're going to remember you, are they going to pass just out of spite? We have so much more real-time information. I think some of that is starting to fade a little bit, but it is a consideration to think about as you're making decisions in the lane on how to sell a car. The other thing to think about, especially as we were just talking about third-party remarketing, is there are new rules coming and new standards coming from the National Auto Auction Association to disclose the actual owner / seller of every vehicle in the lane. So as you think about, great, I'm going to work with such and such remarketing company who's been at this auction for years. They cultivate the dealer base. They work closely with the auction. They've got great lane and position and run numbers. Oh, that's excellent. Well, I still think that holds up. I still think that's a valuable play and something you need to consider, no doubt. But if it's going to be much easier in tomorrow's world for the dealer to see, but I know this car belongs to such and such credit union, and I know that the last three cars I bought from such and such credit union had these problems, or I know that when I brought this one back, they balked and said, no, you own it. arbitration is a process that happens in the auction. Sometimes something gets missed, and how you handle that can really affect your business at the auction going forward. So it really becomes about managing your brand and whether or not you're relying on the auctions to rep your car, you're relying on a third-party remarketer, you're leveraging the internet or not. You have responsibility, if you're selling cars wholesale, for managing your brand, and that will affect the values you're getting for your cars and how quickly you're selling, et cetera, et cetera. So I said we were going to talk about the floor price. Have I talked about the floor price yet? The science of that is really about just feeding in the data that's available out there. So if you're not familiar with the wholesale guidebooks, become familiar. One of the things we did years ago, which is one of the most popular tools within our system, is a direct connection to Black Book, to MMR, and to NADA. We developed our own algorithm called AutoIMS Commercial Estimate. It's just a cross-section of the commercial landscape, but from one click, taking into account the condition of the vehicle reported by the auction, you need to be able to see these values to start giving you like a grounding point. What's this car worth? Then you can start to overlay your art. And part of the art in selling a car and pricing a car properly is get to know your auction folks, make friends with them. These people have been doing it. They have their hands on the vehicle. They are doing every version of kicking the tires you can do. The more trust you guys have in each other with your auction partners, the more forthright they will be. Talk to your peers who's selling like inventory. What are they seeing in the market? Are things trending up or down? How's the action in the lanes? That kind of thing. And don't be afraid to kick the tires yourself. You know, it's one thing if you never get to touch one of the cars that's repossessed. The vendor goes out, picks up the car, takes it to the auction after a certain number of days. They might report on the condition. The auction might report on the condition. And you might never know that car smelled funny. Or that if you replace that windshield, boy, that car would have brought a little bit more money in the lane. That kind of thing. We saw a women in remarketing panel. The auto remarketing folks honor a group of women who make a difference in the remarketing space, such a traditionally male-dominated atmosphere, but not so much anymore, which is just fantastic. They do this every year, and one of the things that stuck with me a couple years ago when they started doing this was, I believe it was Christy Gobin, who runs a fantastic auction, Greater Milwaukee. It's an independent auto auction, strong leader of that organization in the industry, and she stood up and she goes, one of the things that makes me successful, I learned at a very early age to figure out what is a car worth. Well, boy, I sat in the audience and went, gosh, that sounds a little intimidating. But since then, I've asked a lot more questions of our clients. How do you do that? And what have you gotten? What have you gotten wrong over the years? What have you gotten right? And where have you landed? And they start to really tell us some of these things. And it's really about getting lots of inputs and testing different things. So speaking of inputs, I want to introduce a couple of quick stats to you. And if you're looking at the slides, yes, I specifically spelled quick incorrectly to tailor it to you guys. We love our credit union, so we'll talk about spelling later. So here's a couple stats I pulled out of the database just in the past week for you specifically. And again, looking at around 450 credit unions worth of data, around 20,000 cars sold year to date, just in terms of the population here. So the average mileage on the cars, just if you want to do some quick benchmarking for your own portfolio, 91,989 average miles on a car. These are cars rolling through the auction lanes for credit unions. That, by the way, is probably a little bit higher than the typical population of cars. So, but it's not. This isn't rust. I mean, that's still a very viable used car. It's going to fetch some money, wholesale and retail. And in fact, you can see the floor prices here. So the average floor price was $8,400, average sale price trending about $100 lower than that. So a couple things here. There's different strategies. You might, as a rule, decide to floor price your car above what you think it's worth and push the auctions. And in general, in the lane, you'll take, maybe you've got a secret floor price you're really willing to go to. But what we do is we have the way the system works is we let the consignor, the credit union, for example, could send the auction. Here's what we want for the car. We call that the requested floor price. The auction bounces back the accepted floor price. So there's a systematic stamp of, yes, we hear you, we see you. That's what we're going to shoot for. And then at the end of the day, we get the sale price reported by the auction in the system. So just comparing the two there. This does vary from one consignor to the next as to whether they tend to come in above or below their floor price. The one thing I would say is if you're flooring cars on average a little bit higher than the sale price, you know, again, you got to look at your sale rate, decide how many cars am I selling of the ones that I'm offering, and am I damaging my brand? Or am I unrealistic in what I'm pricing these cars for? The other stat I really like to look at whenever I talk to a client is the percentage of vehicles with a floor price at all. So some people just ignore this process, or they write it down on a piece of paper somewhere. So either way, if you're not kind of putting a benchmark out there, stake in the ground about the value of that car, what are you measuring against later, or how accurate are your measurements because you're not tracking this, or you're tracking this in a spreadsheet somewhere. So those are just a few of the thoughts I want to give on working the very top line and maximizing value on the car. If nothing else, if you're new to this, segment your vehicles, know what kind of cars you're selling, track the market per segment, and then test different strategies. Price high 1 week, price low the next week. See how it affects your brand if you're a little bit more aggressive in driving up your sale rate, all of those types of things. So let's go to the next slide, which is working the bottom line. And I will tell you a couple things about working the bottom line in the auction industry. First of all, this is a very service-oriented industry. I just see some of the best customer service, and I love being a reflection of that here at Auto IMS. But one of the things that happens in that arena is the squeaky wheel. How apropos a metaphor, but the squeaky wheel will get the grease. And so the more you bark, the more you ask for help, the more relationship you build with your auction partners, the more they're going to work with you on your fees. And just as importantly on managing that bottom line is meeting your expectations. So some of the expectations you should be setting with your auction partners is, How quickly, if you're having them come pick up a car from a repo lot, how quickly do you expect them to get that car? I know many of the credit unions we talk to are very conservative through the redemption process and also just being compliant with state laws in terms of how long you need to wait to sell the car. So a lot of lenders just send the car to the auction immediately and then do everything they can to make sure that auction doesn't sell the car before the 10-day NOI period or whatever expires. A lot of the credit unions are even more conservative, and they say, I'm not even going to transport that car to the auction until that 10 days or 5 days, whatever state you're in, until that time expires. But once you do decide to move that car, don't you want it to move quickly? So we always give our clients, or all our clients have a place to post their guidelines, their expectations, and one more place to communicate and track how well their auctions are doing in terms of get that car within 1 day. Or I'm going to send my car to the auction across the town. Other expectations, how quickly do you write a condition report? And again, not only are you just reinforcing that, but can you manage that? You have to measure what you're trying to manage. I mean, the old adage is there, right? So benchmark your fees, try to figure out what others are paying, others like you are paying for a sale fee at the auction, or if you're working with third-party remarketers, ask them, you know, how much of the bottom line are you taking here? And make sure you're measuring those key benchmark dates and processes. A couple more quick stats. Still spelled incorrectly on purpose. So the average check amount, so we looked on the previous slide, the average sale price was $83.82. Average check amount is $8,073. So you can kind of see the net and do your own math on the fees, $309. And then I cheated a little bit. I looked at across our database. So this is everyone doing repossessions in Auto IMS. We actually have a recovery module that lets you manage your repo agents and the whole repo process. And the people using that, and that's more than just credit unions, that's why I put an asterisk, I looked, and the average fee, the involuntary repo fees that they're being charged over the last year or so, $364, and that was a huge range, by the way, but the average came out to $364, in case those numbers help you. I talked about a windshield before, and we didn't really talk much about repairs, but that's one of the big processes that we look at, and the next slide is called magnifying the process, and again, this is measuring what you manage and making decisions about the car. So figure out where your bottlenecks are. One of the bottlenecks our clients encounter is the repair process, and one of the reasons we exist is because clients are doing a lot of repairs to their cars because they know if they put $100 into a windshield, they're going to get $200 back in the lane. You have to decide how, you know, what's commercially reasonable or not, but also what's just the right thing to do by way of your debtor. If you're able to net out $100 higher, can you maintain a better relationship with your debtor because they're on the hook for less at the credit union? Other bottlenecks still exist around data connectivity. So while we are tightly integrated with the auto auctions, many of our clients still aren't integrated with us or otherwise integrated with the remarketing process. So maybe the vehicle is repossessed and you had to send a spreadsheet or an email or something over to the repo vendor. Maybe you have a repo system like RDN or you're using ours, something like that. How do you then get that data into Auto IMS? Who's rekeying VINs, copying, pasting from one system to the next? All of the time spent doing that, never mind fixing the errors that inevitably come with manually inputting data about a vehicle, very tedious, but couldn't that be better spent picking up the phone, calling your auction, spending time cultivating your brand in the lanes, doing research on what the market's doing, all of the higher value activities to remove bottlenecks from your process and get the biggest bang for your buck in the lanes. Couple more quick stats for you. Again, asterisk data here. This is across all of our repo clients, but average days to an involuntary repossession, 11 days from assignment to repossession. This one's always a big one. This is kind of the big benchmark in the auction process. We have very reliable data from the auctions literally as they scan a vehicle into their gate. We are updated in our system, and the consignor of that vehicle can see, great, the car arrived. They know if the title showed up and all that good stuff. And then from the time the car sells, the date the car sells. So we automatically calculate. So looking across the credit union population and Auto IMS year to date, average days to sell, 34. So that can include some of you, some credit unions who send cars to the auction and have a waiting period. This includes very high level of service at the credit union. Some cars might go on a redemption hold. It looks like the debtor's going to pay. All right, we'll hold it. That's fine. Some of these are just sell it as quickly as you can. This deal is done. We need to get money for this car. Across the board, 34 average days to sell. 8.9 average days from the time the title arrives at the auction to the time the car sells. A best practice moment, I don't know that this is one, but something you can think about is using that title as a mark in the process to say we're ready to sell the car. Some of our lender clients do that. They tell the auctions, don't sell the car unless you've got the title. So then measuring from that date gets really interesting. So a lot of the things we talked about today are really about holding yourselves accountable and also thinking about who else is holding you accountable. Are spreadsheets enough? Are there opportunities in your process? Are there opportunities in the financial approach to selling wholesale in the remarketing space? Who's holding you accountable? This is where we make the weird segue to that other topic, which is the whole compliance and security thing. And so I just wanted to wrap up with a few words about that, just because we're hearing so much about it. We can't go to a conference, and we're so involved. All of our contracts with our lender clients are evolving massively. So what I'll say is here's one of the jokes that we're lost, kind of a little bit of humor lost by not having the animation on the presentation. But I was going to just flash a slide that said my social security number is, the number, and then put up this is not, and hopefully get a chuckle out of you. we learned a good lesson, and we can all learn a good lesson from your friends at the Credit Union League, the Illinois Credit Union League, and Drew got back to me and said, you know, I couldn't even send your presentation out because it had a number in this format, 123-45-6789, and our email server caught it. Well, what other systems do you have as a lender at the credit union? What other systems do you have that are catching that? It's a necessary number to pull a credit score, I guess, and to track your debtors and all of that. We have asked our lenders to stop sending it to us. We've always encrypted the data. We do everything we can not to tie together this personally identifiable information. But first of all, thinking about where that data is going and how it's treated. Does that data need to go there? And ultimately, as the lender with the relationship with the debtor, you are held accountable by our friends at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and other regulators to keep that data safe. The other thing that we're hearing about is how not to discriminate in the lending process. And depending on your arrangements with cooperatives or dealerships, or even just if you're, you know, you are the lien holder and your members work with you to take out an auto loan and not necessarily with a dealership, you're still ultimately responsible for not discriminating, especially on race, obviously. That's the big one where a lot of people are getting in trouble and getting fined. And a lot of our lender clients didn't even know it was coming. We know where the path with good intentions is paved, all of that good stuff. But they didn't even know it was happening because their dealers were out writing loans in a discriminatory manner in their name. So the thing that, you know, I hope my colleague Keely will thank me for putting out there is we'd say audit your vendors accordingly. If you have vendors that have to, by virtue of maybe being a skip trace company, something like that, they have to have that Social Security number, go deeper with them. Make sure they're treating that data right. Know what's happening to that data. If you have vendors like us that don't touch that data or don't have to touch that data, stop sending the data and don't, you know, try to make it a little bit easier on those vendors, because you're just going to drive costs up across your process if you have to go super deep with audit processes and contracts and all that stuff when it's not necessary. So audit your vendors accordingly through the recovery process. You know, we talked about valuing a car. I still think that's very important from a regulatory standpoint. If you can prove that you're doing a commercially reasonable process, obviously, you know, that's very important. And then tracking and keeping the history of the remarketing process is not something I think too many think about as much as they could. And I know we often, not often, but often enough, go deep into the well, deep into the archives, and show our clients how to retrieve the whole timeline and chronology of what they did through the auction process, because all of a sudden something came back in a bankruptcy court or something for a particular debtor, and they've got it all right there in front of them to present to the court. Now, even if this were well-defined, I wouldn't have all the answers, but that's just some of the things we're seeing. So that's really the core content I wanted to cover with you today. I hope you learned a few things. I mean, we covered the lending landscape, covered maximizing recovery, I think, some of the nebulous rules and in compliance these days, and then, of course, the proper spelling of the word quick, all important topics. So, again, thanks for the opportunity to talk. I think if we've had a few minutes for questions, certainly willing to take them.
Great. Thank you so much, Joe. Just a reminder, if you have a question for Joe, just hit *2 on your touch tone keypad. I'll see a queue up here on my screen, and I can open the line for you. Joe, I'm actually curious about the redemption process. Is it better to aim for a redemption while the car is still at the repo agent lot, or should we just, you know, let the auction handle it?
Sure, and definitely one of those art and science questions, especially at the credit union level, I would imagine. I hear so many different things. We see companies, and we tie to all sorts of third parties. We're connected to repo agents. We're connected to the online auctions, and we're connected to a lot of these companies that are popping up in between, to the point where the folks are trying to sell cars right off a repo agent lot. And there's a model that we haven't seen catch fire yet. Part of that is because of the nature of a repo agent lot. Oftentimes gravel, oftentimes, you know, a person and his spouse and a dog, and so when you start talking about redemptions and being aggressive with selling a car, et cetera, do you want your debtor to go to the repo agent lot to get their car back? What does that mean from a service level to that member? And it might mean that the repo agent lot is closer to their house, and so it's easier. But it also might mean that they're going to a place that's not exactly a friendly or fun place to go to. I'm not saying auto auctions are Disney World, but, you know, auto auctions are a place of business, very professional, and there's typically a nice office you can walk into. They don't always love dealing with the redemption process, but they, all of them will handle it, I think. So that, again, it's an art and science thing related to how quickly you want to sell the car and the experience you want for your debtor.
And do they serve Starbucks? Or, no. Well, great answer. We are getting close to the top of the hour, and unfortunately there's no questions for you. You must have answered them all very thoroughly. So at this point, I'll just thank everybody who joined in on the call today, and thank you, Joe, very much for being with us today. We sure appreciate it. For a complete list of all our educational offerings, I do invite the participants to visit our website at www.iculeague.org. I hope everybody has a great rest of the day, and you can hang up your phone. Joe, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Drew. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. Soon.
Thank you so much.